I'm recording it.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Maria. I am a food addict and a compulsive overeater. Thank you, Daniel, so much for asking me to speak today. It's so great to be here and to see everyone. And happy birthday, 63 years. That's pretty amazing for OA. And what a joy and what a pleasure it is to have this program. I'll give you a little bit about my background and some of my stories. I think they're funny. Hope that you guys do as well. So I came into the rooms in 2012, and I came into the rooms in a bit of an unconventional way. I was watching this show called Mike and Molly. And Mike and Molly met each other at an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. And at the time, I was living in the DC, Virginia area, and I was feeling a little bit lonely. And I thought to myself, oh, Mike and Molly met each other at an OA meeting. Maybe I'll find somebody there. So I had heard of Overeaters Anonymous, but didn't really know what it was about. I knew more about like AA. I had heard about that more than I did about OA. So I went on to OA.org and I found the quiz, and I took the quiz and I answered all the questions, and I answered them either right or wrong, depending on, you know, how you feel, how you answered that quiz. And I found the meeting list, and there were a few meetings that I could go to in the Virginia area. And one meeting was a newcomer meeting. So I got all the information, and it took me three times to gather up the courage to go into that meeting. The first time I drove up into the parking lot, I drove away. The second time I walked down the stairs, I got freaked out and I ran away. And then the third time I gathered the courage to go into the meeting. And I don't really remember exactly what was said at the meeting, but there were a couple things that stood out to me during the meeting. The first was that there was a lot of talk about higher power and God, and I had no idea how a higher power or God would help me with a diet and help me lose weight. The second thing I heard was abstinence. And I was like, oh, I was like, I can handle abstinence because I'm a compulsive dieter and I know exactly what it is to abstain from food and keep coming back. And I heard that a lot, and a lot of people were saying that. And I knew that there was something going on in these rooms that I needed to be part of. There was so much joy and happiness in the rooms, and there was so much love, and you can tell like people cared so much about each other, and even like about me walking into the room as a stranger. And people were sharing like all these things, like about food behaviors and different things that happen in their lives, and especially about the food behaviors, because for me, like those are my deepest, darkest secrets that I would never tell anybody in a million years. And people were out there sharing them in the open, laughing about them. And I was like, you know, something is going on in these rooms and I need to figure out what's going on. And I just, you know, like I said before, I just knew that this was like a warm, loving space that I needed to be a part of. So I have been a compulsive dieter pretty much all my life. I started, like one of my first memories was when I was 10 years old. We were living in New York City and we had just moved to New Jersey, and I was starting a new school in fifth grade, and my mom took me shopping so I'd have a new outfit for back to school. And I bought a pair of these red, or my mom bought me this pair of red overalls. And I was so excited to wear these red overalls for my first day of school. So probably like a week or two before school started, I wanted to try on the overalls with different shirts to see how it looked. And I tried on the overalls and they didn't fit. And I was devastated and I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to tell my mom that these overalls didn't fit. So that night at dinner, I went downstairs and I told my family, I'm like, I'm not going to be eating anymore. The only thing that I'm going to eat is, and I hope we can mention food, like a little can of tuna fish. And I was going to drink Tab or Diet Shasta or whatever it was. And no one even blinked an eye. They were like, okay, you know, whatever. And that's what I did for like a week, for the week before school started. And I tried on my overalls the night before and they fit. And that put in my mind that, all right, this is a diet that I need to be on, that this is going to make me thin, and that by, refraining from food, that I'm going to be skinny and my life is going to be perfect. I'm going to find the perfect boyfriend. I'm going to have the perfect life, the perfect job, whatever it is. And unfortunately, that binging, restricting carried on throughout my life since I was 10 years old. The higher power God part of it, I was raised Catholic, and do I believe in a God? Absolutely. But my God was more like writing in my diary, like, dear diary, I need to lose 10 pounds, or like laying in bed at night after a binge crying because I was so stuffed and disgusted with myself. And I'm like, God, please let me wake up tomorrow and, be 10 pounds thinner or whatever it was. And that was like my version of praying, which obviously, as we know, doesn't work. So I continued like through this really bad cycle of dieting and binging and starving and cut to now I was living in New York City again, and it was a Sunday, and I had a really, really bad binge, and I was laying on the floor in pain, and I went to weigh myself because that's what everyone does after they have a binge. And I got on the scale and I was 198 pounds. And that was the most that I've ever weighed. And I'm not even 5'3". And I was like, oh, I got to find a new diet. I have to figure this out. I have to do something. I have to lose the weight. And a commercial came on for gastric bypass surgery. And I was like, ah, that's God talking to me. I need gastric bypass surgery. So there was a number. So I called the number and a woman answered the phone, and she was getting some information from me. And I told her how tall I was, how much I weighed. And she said, oh, you're not a candidate for a gastric bypass, but we have like a nutrition program, blah, blah, blah. And immediately I said to her, well, how much would I have to weigh to get gastric bypass surgery? And she said like some number. I don't even remember what it was. And I thought to myself, I'm like, I could gain this weight and then have gastric bypass and I would be skinny and my life would be perfect. So I ended up doing probably like, I don't even know if it was my first pay and weigh, but the woman on the phone was like, we'll set you up with the doctor, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, the doctor's name is Dr. Waitman. I was like, excuse me. And she's like, yes, Dr. Wight. I'm like, that's not his real name. She goes, no, absolutely, that's his name. So of course, like I went and I did this pay and weigh, and we all know how that goes. Of course, with no program, it didn't really go really well. So back to when I came into the rooms, I was struck abstinent right away. But I don't like I was abstinent for a year. And part of the problem was I wasn't really working the steps. Was I abstinent? I don't really know. In my mind, I was kind of treating it like a diet because I knew if I got that shiny 1 year chip that I would be skinny and my life would be perfect. Story of my life. So, that unfortunately wasn't the case, but I did make it to a year. I got the shiny chip, and probably like, I don't even know. A couple of days later, I had a huge binge and I was embarrassed to tell my sponsors, to tell any of the people, that I was connected with in OA. And I finally did. And I admitted it in a meeting and I was crying and got really upset. But then I got angry. And I was so angry at OA, at myself, at my higher power. I was basically angry at the world. I'm like, this program's stupid. It's not for me. This didn't work, blah, blah, blah. And I went to another pay and weigh, and then so basically I went to a pay and weigh, and that didn't work, and I stayed away from OA for 9 months, and some people call it quote unquote research. So I stayed away for 9 months, and I had some health issues during that time. I had a hysterectomy and some other things going on. And I gained a lot of weight again. And I was at work and it was a Wednesday and something told me I need to go back to an OA meeting. And I knew at that point that that was my higher power, but I was scared to walk into the rooms because I was like, people were going to be like, where were you? Why'd you stay away? You gained weight, blah, blah, blah. And I walked into the rooms and I was welcome with open arms. And it was like, I never left. And I never left from that point on. Abstinence didn't come easy to me. When I came back, I struggled with it for a long time. I would string together like 30 days, 60 days, 90 days and break my abstinence again. And I had a pretty tough sponsor at the time. And when, I would break my abstinence, she would put me back what we called step zero and trying to find my abstinence again and working step one. And, she basically like kept me on step one for a really long time. So I eventually strung together some abstinence. And at one point, I think I had like 3 years, but I was still struggling and like not really having my act together. So I went to, this was like probably, I don't know, the first time I ever went to a convention. And I didn't really read the big book at the time. So I didn't really know like what was going on, like with the big book, any of the chapters. Like I heard people talking about it in the meetings and I'd write down like a page number and I'm like, oh, I should read this page or this paragraph or whatever it was. But I never did because the big book scared me. So during this one convention, it was my first convention I've ever been to. I was with my sponsor at the time and we were going through the program and she said, what, she's like, which things interest you? Where do you, what do you want to go to? And I was looking down the thing and there was one session on the doctor's opinion. So I looked at her and I said, oh, what doctor is going to be here? And she looked at me and she started laughing and she was like, you haven't read the big book yet, have you? And I was like, no, I haven't. And she's like, you need to, go to the beginning of the book and read the doctor's opinion. So I did read the doctor's opinion and then I went to that session, but it didn't really like the message that came through really didn't hit me until I heard this podcast about the doctor's opinion. And this basically changed my program. This podcast talked about the doctor's opinion, but broke it down into the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And I know that I have an allergy to certain foods. And why, when I ingest those foods in my body, the obsession starts. And I can't stop thinking about this food and wanting to eat it. And I can't stop eating it. So I knew right then and there that I am a food addict. I'm a compulsive eater, but it's not my fault. Maybe I was born this way. Maybe it's in my DNA. I'm not a normal eater. I know so many normal eaters that, can eat whatever they want and not be on diets and do whatever. But I know for me, that's absolutely not the case. So the doctor's opinion has been huge for me in my recovery. And today I can say that I've been abstinent for 3 years, thankfully, one day at a time. And it's been a really good, strong abstinence. I met my sponsor, at a convention probably, I want to say 5 years ago, maybe it could be even 6 years ago. And she's been my sponsor ever since. And she's been an incredible, amazing support for me. So talking about the fun and recovery part of the celebration today. So we all know that addiction is a really serious business. It's so serious, in fact, that it's absolutely a matter of life and death. But part of the beauty of recovery is that after the darkness of addiction, there's hope and joy in life. And because we've tasted despair, no pun intended, the hope that seems so much sweeter. When I walk into the rooms or a fellowship or join a Zoom or whatever it is, I'm always greeted with smiles, love, lots of laughter every single time without fail. And the big book on page 132 talks about we alcoholics aren't a glum lot. And I'll read verbatim what it says. I believe that truer words have never been written about us, but we aren't a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered, have been given the power to help others. So just to, oh, good. I was timing myself. I have exactly 5 minutes left. So I wanted to talk about, what in OA makes me happy, and that's service. And I've heard people talk about this and say that service is slimming, and maybe it is, maybe it's not, but for me, service keeps me abstinent. And I was taught from the very beginning when I was a newcomer how important service was to each meeting. And it doesn't matter what type of service you do, whether it's setting out chairs or setting out literature or timing a meeting or being a host of a meeting. It all service, any little or big part of service absolutely matters. And for me, it's what keeps me coming back to meetings. My current sponsor taught me, or well, I say taught me, but maybe forced me into doing a higher level of service. And when I was in Virginia, I became a rep for Region 7, and I did higher service there, which was really great, being on different committees, being on the convention committee. And when I moved back from DC to New Jersey, it's almost about 4 years now. I was so excited that Region 7 was still part of New Jersey and I could still continue the service that I was doing. I probably take on more service than I think that I should, but my higher power thinks it's okay for now. I'm the vice chair of North Jersey Intergroup. And I serve on a few different committees on within our intergroup. I'm also the Region 7 chair of the convention committee, and that has been absolutely terrifying and rewarding at the same time. I've never relied on my higher power so much to do something, but the thing about service is that you don't do it alone. And putting together the convention live and in person for the first time in a really long time took so much work, and I could have absolutely not done it without the committee. And it's been such an incredible, rewarding experience. And I'm going to do a shameless plug. We are having our convention live and in person again this year in November, third, fourth, and fifth in Ocean City, Maryland. But, I am just so grateful for this program. I'm so grateful for the promises that have come through for me and come true for me. The people that I've met in these rooms, for my sponsor, for having a higher power now that I know exists in my life. That's not just a dear God, please help me lose 10, 20, 30 pounds. Like, I know that I have this higher power. My higher power has my back, regardless of what I do. And I couldn't do anything that I do today without my higher power. And with that, I will end. And thank you so much for letting me share.
Would you mind recording it?
This meeting is being recorded.
Hi, everybody. I'm Marty, and I am a very grateful compulsive overeater. So many people come into OA, for the vanity, and they stay for the sanity. I came in for the sanity, and I left because of the vanity, and was in relapse for well over 15 years. I'm not going to tell you my whole story because, I could go back to age four, as a compulsive overeater. And, my sponsor says, the back, it really doesn't matter so much, how you got here. The important thing is that you did get here. And so I'm going to tell some of my story, and I'm going to, tell you about some of the fun and the miracles along the way that I've experienced. Well, the first thing is I'm just going to show you what it was like before I came into OA. I had my, well, we just had the big blizzard in Buffalo. The last time I had a big blizzard like that was in 1977. And I was at my first job in Fredonia, New York, which is right along the coast of Lake Erie. And it's about 45 to minutes to an hour west of there in western New York. And so, with the weather and everything, it's very, very, very isolating. And I was an isolator anyway. So imagine this picture. I'm in my apartment, and my apartment is a total mess. It's a total mess. I would be embarrassed for anybody to see it. And I'm in my recliner. And I'm eating a half a gallon of something and a big pie with double crust. you know, both of them. I'm eating it all, you know, and I'm getting sick and I'm getting drunk from the food and I fall asleep in a drunken stupor, you know, on the recliner. I mean, so I really identify with the alcoholic because I got drunk on food. You know, I just, it, you know, alcohol just wasn't my substance of choice. Well, I got into OA through the back door. You know, I was in a relationship that was very codependent, where the person I was with, she was having problems and I took on her problems. I was gaining weight and she gained weight. And so I went, so somebody told me about Codependence Anonymous and I went to a meeting. You know, and I heard people and I just wasn't sure if that was the right place. But in that church, there was a sign about Overeaters Anonymous. And I didn't know anything about it. And I said, maybe that's where I should be. So I found out about OA and I went to my first meeting. And, you know, again, you know, I heard about, you know, God and higher power and all these people are fanatics. And I said, they're much worse than I am, you know, so why do I want to be here? And I left. But this is the first miracle. There was somebody at that meeting that I knew from work. I didn't work with her directly, but I knew her from work. Thank God she's still in OA, actually. And so after a few months of more struggle and, you know, and isolating and horrible, I sent her an email and I said, you know, I think maybe I need to go back to OA and give it a chance. And she said to me, Marty, when I feel there's something I need to do, I pray for the willingness to want to do it. And I, you know, it was, I'd never heard of that before. Praying for the willingness to want to do something. I assume that you pray for the willingness, but this was one step back. And I never prayed for anything in my life, you know, like that. My prayers to God were, why did you make me like this? And you know, and things like that. So I did it, you know, I acted as if. And before I knew it, I was at my second meeting. And at that second meeting, I heard different things. You know, I heard they keep coming back. I saw, you know, a lot of the joy, you know, in the room. And, you know, and I became abstinent right there, you know, at that first meeting. And I knew I needed to find a sponsor. And it was somebody who was very friendly to me. And I asked her if she would be my sponsor. And said she couldn't, but she referred me to somebody else, this guy, Mike. And Mike was just the sweetest guy. And actually, but Mike sponsored so many people. And, you know, but we became sort of like a clique, you know, a groupies, you know, for Mike. And I, all of a sudden, I was making real friendships, you know, that I never had before. You know, and we were doing things together. We were, you know, when OA had retreats, we were going to the retreats together. We were playing, you know, games together. We were going to the movies together. We're having dinner before, you know, the meeting every Thursday night. And, you know, and with Mike, I actually had my first abstinent Seder, you know, and with one of the other friends in this group, I had my, well, I had never celebrated Sukkot before, but it was an absolute Sukkot at her house. But let me tell you a little bit about, you know, Mike. You know, Mike was very funny. And, you know, and so he would say a lot of, to tell a lot of stories. And the first thing he said was I called him, you know, in a panic, you know, because I wanted to have, you know, a non-abstinent food, you know, for me. Which is a trigger food, which was a slice of what I used to eat. And I called him up and he said, Marty, do you remember what it tasted like? And I said, yes. He said, well, it tastes exactly the same. You know, and once he said that, you know, it just took it away, you know, from me. The other story I love, and I'm very terrible at telling jokes, so I'm going to tell you this one. The story was, there was some guy and he kept, you know, praying to God and saying, God, why won't you let me win the lottery? What would be so bad, you know, if I could win the lottery? And, you know, this went on and on several days. And one day he heard God speak to him. He said, well, get a lottery ticket, buy a lottery ticket already. So I started to have fun, you know, in a way. And I started to have a life. And I joined into group. I got involved in service. I was sponsoring several people. You know, people in OA come in all different sizes. I was sponsoring somebody who was anorectic, you know, totally different from me. And I've actually reconnected with her since I've been back, you know, after my over 15-year relapse. And I've actually reconnected with a lot of people. And it was so wonderful when I did come back that there were so many people I knew, you know, from meetings. So that was really very joyful to me. And I actually, with a friend in OA, we started a meeting together, a lunchtime meeting in Piscataway, you know, figuring all the people that, you know, worked in a lot of the pharmaceutical companies in the area and other industries, that this would be a good place for an OA meeting. And, you know, we had people, you know, come for a while. It was hard, you know, to keep it going, but, you know, we did our best. But there was one day that somebody shared, and she shared that she accepted herself just the way she was today. And I said to myself, well, I don't think I can really accept myself until I lose the weight. But I left that meeting saying to myself, if she can accept herself where she's at, you know, in her recovery, well, maybe I can accept myself too. And so I think, you know, we learn from each other, you know, in the meetings and things that we hear. You know, but unfortunately, you know, my sponsor, Mike, passed away. Myself and another friend, we actually went to Eastern Pennsylvania and we kept knocking on the door, you know, to try to, you know, get him to come back. And it took a long time. Finally, he answered the door. He said he would come back. The next thing I knew, a few days later, he dropped dead. And, you know, so that was the first pain, you know, that I had in program. So not only do you have the joy and the fun, you also get the pain, you know, also, because you get close, you know, to people. So then I got a second sponsor. His name was Bill. And he had a partner whose name was Mark. Now, Bill, you know, had, you know, several years of recovery. His partner, Mark, said he, you know, he was very large. He had a PhD in nutrition. So it really doesn't matter, you know, where, you know, what your education level is, or even if you're in the field. And he smoked a lot and he drank a lot. And he would say, well, I'm not really a compulsive overeater. I just like to eat a lot. You know, that was his denial, I guess. And then one day after going to a conference in Germany, when he got off the plane, he dropped dead. So he's the second person that dropped dead, you know, in the program. And then Bill went out, you know, he actually went out a little bit before then. And I remember when I went to the funeral and I met Bill at the door, he said to me, Marty, you're too thin. That's, you know, he just, you know, it's weird how we have, you know, we don't really have a good sense of our bodies a lot of times, you know, like body dysmorphia. So he went out. And he's still out, but, you know, I've gotten back in contact with him. I was doing volunteer work from somebody that from program, and who was a psychiatric nurse. And she told me about this guy, Charles. And Charles was somebody who also was very much an isolator. And it was very, very hard to get him to do anything. And it took a long time until she got him to be willing to meet with me and somebody else. And we met him and we said, you know, let us take you to the meeting. And, you know, and at that point, you know, I used to so many times go to his house and pick him up, you know, to go to the meeting, you know, and he was a little manic. One day, you know, he said he had won the lottery. He has the lottery. He actually won the lottery and he was going to give me $1 million, you know, and but he was such a sweet guy. And I could see, you know, in a way he touched so many people and he really came out of his shell, and, you know, and people loved him because he was so pure. Well, he fell in love with somebody, and the person he fell in love with said she would come to OA after she had the bariatric surgery, and she died on the operating table. And Charles died of a broken heart. You know, he died a few weeks after that. But this is the first time, you know, I've ever seen anything like that, that myself and a lot of OA friends, we got together and we had a memorial service, you know, for Charles, you know, with programs and everything. And you know, it was so sweet, you know, as a way, you know, of saying, you know, saying goodbye to him. And then, you know, the other thing that happened to me, a program, a lot of things didn't happen to me so good. You know, I'm abstinent, but all these people are dropping dead around me. And then somebody borrowed $20,000 from me in OA. Well, I figured they're in OA, you know, I can trust them. You know, no promissory note, nothing. I never saw the $20,000 again. And I held on to a resentment against her for such a long, long time. And, you know, I was very naive, you know, about a lot of things. And so finally, you know, I did get rid of the resentment and was through, again, acting as if, you know, I acted as if, you know, I wanted for her the things I would want for myself. Well, then I ended up going back to Fredonia, you know, on a visit. And, you know, when I was in Fredonia, I went to look at the old apartment that I used to live in that was behind the photography store. And it wasn't there, you know, anymore. And I said, well, what happened? You know, what happened to it? The snow hit had made the roof fall into the apartment. So, I mean, it's good nobody was living there, you know, at the time, you know, and that was kind of weird. And I even went back to the White House Hotel where I used to go there for brunch, you know, on Sundays, you know, because it was all you can eat. And one day the manager came over to me and he said, please don't ever come again. And, you know, and then my eating, you know, was in secret, you know, after that. But the thing that happened to me when I went to Fredonia is a town near Fredonia called Lilydale. And Lilydale is the World Center for Spiritualists. And it's an interesting place. You know, you go in and they have a list of the mediums, you know, on the board. And, you know, I figured, well, you know, let me try it. You know, maybe it'll be interesting. And, you know, I went to somebody who draws your aura. They look at 3 years before and 3 years afterwards. And as she's drawing my aura, all of a sudden she says to me, did you have a friend, Charles, who passed away recently? And she named him by name. And I said, yes. And he said, was Charles somebody that it was hard to get him to do things? And I said, yes. And she said to me, you've been having trouble getting to do things. And Charles wants you to know that he's pushing you to get those things done. And ever since then, I've thought of, you know, Charles as my angel, you know, in heaven. So it was really something else. Well, anyway, the weight came off. I was looking great. A lot of people were telling me I'm too thin. And I start going to a Berkeley Heights meeting. and the vanity, you know, kicks in. And then my other addiction kicks in also that I have. And I found excuses, you know, to go to the meeting. I was getting to the meeting late and et cetera. And before, I was not going to the meeting. And I was officially in relapse, you know, from OA. And I had now another addiction on top of the food addiction. So I was doubly addicted, you know, at this point. And so anyway, it was a lot of double trouble. I end up having a disease, which I take medication for, you know, every day. And unfortunately, this medication causes weight gain. So, I mean, so the fact that I've lost, you know, 45 pounds, you know, since I entered program and haven't gained weight because of this, you know, medication, is good. But, you know, of course I'm judgmental. Why isn't all the weight coming off? Why is it so slow? Well, you know, I'm 69. You know, things happen a little slower, you know, when you're 69. You know, my sponsor is the same age, you know, and, you know, basically had the same issue, you know, for both of us. And as we said, look, you're older. You know, it's going to come off, you know, slower. But I am, you know, being more active, and that's really helping me a lot also. So anyway, I did have reprieves, you know, while I was in, while I was struggling in program, and I would travel for work. I was involved internationally, and I did some work in Liberia, Africa. You know, I was there on a USAID project, and one of the things about Liberia I noticed is there was no compulsive readers, nobody drank, and nobody smoked, you know, and it was very interesting just to see this, you know, as an outsider. But anyway, what happened because of my other addiction, when I moved, a devastating, you know, things happened. You know, we moved a year and a half ago, you know, from Dunellen to an over 55 community in Monroe Township. And it's interesting. Before, when I was packing, I threw away all the OA literature, you know, when I came across it. But when I was unpacking, I found that I had not thrown it all away. It was, some of it was still there. And so this devastation happened, and I just got down on my hands and knees, and I cried. I cried. I cried. I cried and cried. And I looked up the Central New Jersey Inch Group website. And the person who was the chair at the time, you know, I said, are you the same person, you know, that I knew, you know, a long time ago in Highland Park? And he said, yes. And I begged him. I said, would you please be my sponsor? And he said, I'm not available to be your sponsor, but I will find you a sponsor. And the first meeting he told me about to go to was in Lawrence Harbor. And Lawrence Harbor, at that time, they were using a new OA book called Body Image, Relationships, and Sexuality. I mean, you know, I guess there are no coincidences, you know. I figured, okay, I'm really in the right place. And it's a writing meeting, too. And I've been there at that meeting ever since. And I'm the Inch Group rep, you know, for that meeting. So, you know, so I've talked about some of the weight loss, but so many miracles, you know, have happened to me, you know, that I've reconnected, you know, with healthy friends. You know, I gave up, you know, all the toxic friendships that I have. I knew that I had to heal before my relationship with Wilson healed. And, you know, and that happened, you know, and our relationship is stronger because of that. And, you know, he doesn't want to even know about what I did in the past, you know, in the other program. But one thing that's wonderful about Wilson, he reminds me if I have an OA meeting. He says, don't you have a meeting tonight? you know, so we can plan our schedules around the meetings, you know. And that's so good because I realized I have to make my recovery first. And, you know, just the way that, you know, it's been said so much is, you know, that and service has really kept me grounded so much. And Zoom, the same thing exists at first. So now all of a sudden I can go to more meetings because of Zoom. And I start to go to meetings in Zoom and I see these people and I assume they're all from Central New Jersey. And one meeting I go to on Friday morning, a very pivotal person at that meeting, I found out is from Northern Ontario. And at another meeting I go to, it's somebody from Idaho. And so and in those two meetings, you know, we decided to stay on Zoom because of those people, because of other people that have, somebody else had mobility issues, because I traveled a lot, somebody else traveled a lot out of the country. So, you know, Zoom really is helpful for a lot of reasons. I started realizing how things were changed when I went to a Thanksgiving and then following a wedding and then, you know, a birthday party. And at the Thanksgiving Day dinner, there was a distant, you know, relative there who was in AA, you know, and we're seeing each other and we're talking and everything. And I just asked Wilson, I said, would you just bring me a small, you know, plate of food? I mean, he knows what I can eat and not eat. He's actually a chef. And so it wasn't about the food, you know, and we had so much fun, you know, after the dinner. I mean, we're playing some game on the computer. I forgot what it was, where they had questions on the screen and we had an app that we were using. And I really having a good time. And when I went to the wedding and to this big birthday party, I got up there and danced. You know, I didn't stay around the food, which is what I used to do all the time. I danced. I was with people. I was talking to people. I was enjoying, you know, myself. And I could see that I was a very different person than I was a year and a half before. And, you know, because of OA, not only did I have fun in OA, I can have fun because of OA. You know, I have hobbies, you know, today. I mean, one thing I love to do is I love to go treasure hunting, you know, and find things, you know, at flea markets. And I do some, you know, selling, you know, online, you know, too. Right now I'm doing Duolingo. And it was somebody today, I was reading somebody talking about being addicted to Duolingo, you know, because they have, you know, different Emerald League and Ruby League and everything else. And so the better you do, you go up and you get gems and whatever. I couldn't care less about that. I just want to learn Spanish, you know, so I go on, you know, for my 15, 20 minutes a day and that's it. But this person who wrote, she got totally caught into the whole thing that she couldn't get off, you know, Duolingo. So, you know, there's some people get addicted to things and people, you know, don't. I was going to the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and you go through the casino and everything, and I play with my $15, and then that's it. Walk away. It's not a drug of choice for me. But I made sure I got to the reception. No, because the receptions, they had all this food, you know, and that was my comfort, you know, space was there. But, you know, that was, you know, before I got back into OA, and I haven't been back to the Consumer Electronics Show, but I know I do want to go again, but I know it's going to be very different, you know, when I go the next time. I don't want to go to the buffets. I don't want to, if I go to the receptions, I just want to walk around, you know, with a glass of Perrier, you know, with a lime in it and, you know, and actually talk to, you know, exhibitors. I talk to people, you know, right now, you know, I'm in Costa Rica, you know, which is wonderful. And, you know, whenever I pass somebody on the beach, I say hello and I start having conversations with people. I never did that before. It's so new to me. And I can walk on the beach and I feel everything around me, you know, the waves of the ocean, the sunset, you know, when it goes down, you know, the howler monkeys that wake us up in the morning, you know, and you know, are active at night. Well, I'm not crazy about the mosquitoes. There's mosquitoes here that you can't see, you know, and for some reason, they're attracted to me, and I'm so bitten up, you know, from mosquitoes. And unfortunately, I'm a compulsive scratcher, you know, which Wilson always yells at me, and he's always carrying around, you know, a spray of Benadryl, you know, to spray everything. But, you know, today I left. I have my sponsor, who's been in AA for a long time. I'm his only sponsee in OA. And because of that, very often, I'm a big connection for him to this program. We can talk for an hour, you know, each day. We become such wonderful friends. And he laughs all the time. He laughs and laughs and laughs. And that laughter is contagious. And we start laughing together, you know, on everything. I mean, it's really wonderful. But he's very serious because he told me, you know, from the very beginning, this is a program not about information. It's about a program of transformation. And while we're reading the big book, he says, underline this, asterisk this. And I start doing all this. And then, I get to step four. And I start doing the inventories, and I get to the fear inventory. And all of a sudden, I have a very vivid nightmare all about fears. And when I woke up, I was crying. I was inconsolable. And so, you know, Wilson tried to console me. And once I calmed down, I start to think about all the miracles that had happened to me. The fact that I'm here, you know, the fact that I'm back in OA. You know, it's just amazing, you know, to me. And so, you know, the other thing was when they had Idea Day, and this is the first time I was going to a live meeting. And I said, well, because I haven't lost all my weight, people are going to judge me. You know, that's the first thing that goes into my head. Everybody's going to be looking at me. You know, and of course, that's not like that. You know, we're so loving to each other. That's what I love about OA, is that closeness that you get with the people around you. And the first thing somebody said to me that, you know, is on a lot of the Zoom meetings I'm on, he says, oh, Marty, you actually have legs and feet, you know, because he's only seen me on Zoom, you know, so... And then, you know, so I got to see people that I hadn't seen in a long time. And the whole thing, wonderful thing is, you know, at the end was the holding hands, you know, and saying together, we can never do this alone. And, you know, saying the Serenity Prayer. And one of the meetings that I go to, you know, on a Monday night is... somebody at that meeting was at that Highland Park meeting. And so, you know, at the end, you know, we'd say, you know, it works when you work it, so work it, you're worth it. But then, you know, what we used to do was added the line, and give a lot of love and don't pick up, you know. And so we're doing it together, you know, give a lot of love and don't pick up. And, you know, and it's so wonderful. Because it is, you know, giving a lot of love. And that, to me, is the most fun and joy. I'll share just one more little thing. Is I went to a virtual meeting where they actually had a game night, you know. And I said, well, what a wonderful thing to have, you know, because people, compulsive overeaters, are isolators. And this was a way to bring people together and have fun, you know, because one of the big things about this program is unity. Of course, it's unity. It's the steps in a higher power and it's service. You know, those, I think that is the three-legged stool, you know, for me. And, you know, and so I've worked the steps, you know, for the really first time, I really worked the steps. And one thing I've had trouble with is meditation, you know. So my sponsor keeps saying, did you meditate? And he said, just do it for 5 minutes, you know, just get into the routine of doing it and just, you know, focus on your breath. And, you know, and I'm doing it again. You know, I got out of the practice of doing it. And, you know, by talking to him, it doesn't. And he has a saying that prayer and meditation, along with self-examination, provides for an unshakable foundation for life. And I love that, you know, and maybe, you know, it's something from AA because I never had heard it, you know, before. And so I always, I think about that and, you know, living in steps, you know, 10, 11, and 12. And I would say the biggest thing for me is service. Service really keeps me grounded. So when they need an intergroup rep at this meeting, I raise my hand and I said, I do it, you know. And, you know, and working on another workshop before, you know, which was this 12-step within workshop, you know, that was great. I really love the connections, you know, that I've made. And I realized, you know, somebody asked me at this idea day, he said, when did you first come into OA? And I started to think about it a lot. And I realized, even though I had been in relapse, I never left OA. I may have left OA, but my higher power never left me. I just needed that wake-up call. And so, because it was always in the back of my mind, you know, it was about OA and all the friendships and the fun and all the love and all the joy, you know, that... you know, I said to myself, well, you know, maybe I never did leave, you know, OA. But thank God, now I'm abstinent and here in OA. And right now I'm sponsoring somebody in this other program of mine, but I really want to sponsor somebody in OA. And so, you know, if somebody needs a sponsor, you know somebody needs a sponsor, I am available. Right now in Costa Rica, they would need to contact me via WhatsApp. But and I gave that information, you know, under my face, if anyone needs it. But this is it's a one day at a time program. I can do it just for today. You know, I don't know about tomorrow. Yesterday is in the past. Yesterday is the past. Yesterday is history. Tomorrow's a mystery. Today is a gift. That's why they call it the present. And I've always loved that. So anyway, thank you. Thanks for letting me tell my story, or a little bit of my story.